Welcome back, everybody. I have a very special guest with me today. As always, we have a cosplayer, host, a little bit of voice actor, a little bit of streamer as well. Most recently, I would say, gone super viral for your Hobie cosplay. Whoa, Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
Yes, of course. Happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation to the space.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. You are in town for a Valorant event, right? Tell me about that. What's going on?
One, I'm entirely too Valorant-pilled personally right now. I play this game entirely too much. But it was my first FPS shooter game, and I'm like, I'm in this space now where like I understand the skill and I'm like hyped about it. But I've cosplayed one of the characters from the game. His name is Phoenix, and he's really cool. Speaking of Hobie, you're Spider-Punk. He's like a really cool black British dude, and like Phoenix is exactly that, just in Valorant. Yeah, he's like this super cool, super charismatic British dude who's just like really silly and fun and like all about like the energy. Like he's the member of his team that everyone's like, bro, chill, and he's like, nah, I got this. It's super sick.
So you're like typecasted, kind of
exactly. Valorant VCT is their Valorant Championship Tournament Americas was in LA this weekend, and so I got to cosplay for Riot Games as Phoenix, and it was very cool.
That's awesome.
And very fun. Yeah,
congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing. I'm glad that it went really, really well for you. That's very cool.
Thank you.
I hope you're back soon.
It was funny. I had never been to like, I've never done anything esports related because I've never played like a game that was like this, PvP. But it was really fun to be at an event where everyone was there for the same thing. It felt like the next level of like a con where that's a fandom space. So everyone there is there because they enjoy or want to partake in fandom. But this was cool because everyone was there because they were about Valorant in particular. So every time I have like a conversation that doesn't go somewhere because somebody just doesn't know a lot about Valorant, that did not happen this weekend.
I was like, oh, this,
and people are like, yeah. I was like, yeah, sick.
So we're all celebrating one thing instead of a bunch of things, like a normal pop culture convention.
Exactly. That was
so
really nice.
You were hired by Riot, right, to be a cosplayer for Valorant. What were you doing every day? Like, take us through a day in the life. A hired cosplayer.
Fortunately, this event was actually very chill compared to some others. But generally, the event lasted from like maybe like 12 to 6, depending. The first day was actually longer because the games went longer than expected. But we were there from like, there's a block party outside the event and outside the arena where they're like hosting guests and such before the event. There's food trucks. Like they had an artist's alley at this event. Then Riot was selling their own merch. Then there's a bunch of different professional Valorant teams that were there just giving out their own merch and like meeting fans as well. So our job was really just to be present in that space so that people felt even more immersed in the engagement and the experience. And it was really fun because I think, again, because everybody's so about Valorant, it was one of those moments where like, everybody was excited to see myself and the other cosplayers because we all looked so good. And so like watching everybody like walk together as a squad, it's like, oh my God, it's them. And
yeah,
that was
like,
that's always like a really cool part of the cosplay experience is when you like see people out of the corner of your eye, be like, you know, even if they're too shy to speak to you, you can still see the excitement on someone's face when they feel like something has come out of a game or like some intangible world and come into like the real world.
That
was really fun. It was basically that all weekend. And of course, I was trying to make like silly content and make like silly engagements and just make people smile. And it was really fun to do that as this character in particular. I've been practicing some of Phoenix's voice lines because he has a very intense accent. And it's not like my voice at all. But there were a couple things that I've gotten, I can say pretty well. And so it was just fun, like seeing somebody be excited and like saying a voice line to them, being like, oh my God, it's like, it was just a cute time.
That's my favorite part of conventions as well is like seeing everybody having, like living their best life, like having an amazing time. It makes me happy.
Yes, exactly.
So I know what you're saying.
Real. One of the things I try to say to every employee that worked for Riot that I met throughout the whole weekend was just appreciating them for any contribution they had to this event because it was a great example of the opportunity to build and support a fandom space. And I feel like fandom spaces are the places where people get to be the most thorough expression of themselves and the things they love and enjoy. And that warms your heart because it's just so real and true and such an authentic expression. So I was trying to make sure I told everybody, like, I appreciate you for making this space and maintaining it and creating it in such a way that we could all be here to collectively make the fans smile. Mm-hmm. It's really, that's what it's really about. It's like the smiles you can generate.
I'm sure that they appreciated that too, because it feels like a thankless job, I'm sure, after a while.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I feel like there's a lot of criticism. Like, for example, I just watched like 3 Valorant videos earlier today, like criticizing like the newest skin bundle in the game and so on. And like, those criticisms are valid, and not to say that like there's not opportunity for improvement, but I feel like there are so many people always like wanting something that it's rare that people take a second to stop and be appreciative of what they have. That sounds kind of cliche almost, but like, I feel like as I get older, it's so true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's more and more true.
Yeah, yeah. Which is also true, I think, to us as content creators, where we will get an entire comment section full of positive reinforcement in the comments, and then one person will have something negative to say, and it's really easy to latch onto that one negative comment and feel really bad about things that you're doing. So you spreading positivity is healing everyone, I think.
Exactly, exactly. Thank you for articulating it that way. I feel even better.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I get it on an intrinsic level, I'd say.
Nice.
Do you deal with the comment section?
Oh, definitely. I think probably in a way that you might not understand, or like a lot of people the cosplay space don't understand. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting, I think. It's fascinating that I think some of the perspectives that I intend to share, I don't think are born out of anything but me wanting to do my best, but they have been criticized in an interesting way. And I think that I understand the criticism, but I also think that a lot of people don't understand the direct perspective. But that said, so yes, I deal with negative comment sections all the time. But as a cosplayer who doesn't limit myself to characters that share my melanin canonically, I often get people who are just upset for whatever you want to say, for whatever reason they are upset. But it's fascinating because, right, first of all, like, I'm old enough now where I really do not care about someone's opinion that is wrong. Like, if when you have an objectively wrong opinion, I have had enough engagements and experiences and have enough life perspective to recognize that it's not worth my time to really invest any energy in correcting somebody who's so willing to be so openly incorrect about something.
In public.
Exactly, in public.
In a public forum.
Exactly. So in that respect, like, I don't, like, at the same time, I'm confident enough in myself and my abilities and everything about the person I am today that I also don't feel the need to correct people either. So I'd argue, I'm definitely, I wouldn't say blind to it, but I'd argue that it rolls off my back more easily than, let's say, a much younger creator. And that's where I think there's kind of an interesting difficulty in how to expectation set. Additionally, it's always interesting to talk about like responsibilities that you may have or not as a creator. And I think for the niche that I exist in, which is incredibly small, like, I am a Black male cosplay crafter in particular, and that particular niche is so limited. And in that respect, that's been really beneficial to me in a sense, because for lack of a better term, there's not a lot of quote unquote competition. Not that creative spaces should be competitive, but in that respect, like, there was an opportunity for me to grow and fill an empty space. And so I was able to grow really quickly as I filled this space where people obviously wanted something but weren't getting what they were looking for. And I feel like I'm proud to say that I think I provide a certain level of engagement and quality and consistency in the way that I like to execute cosplay that is really fun, especially for my niche, I guess. But with that in mind,
it's an immense amount of pressure.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Because as much as I think a while ago I was like, oh, nothing is, I have no responsibilities that I didn't sign up for or agree to. But I think as I've gotten older, you definitely have to acknowledge that your actions do have an impact, and everything you do in some way or another sets an example. And I feel that way about most things in my life. Like, I've been in a lot of leadership positions in my life, and I think it's really important to be an engaged and an intentional leader and to recognize that, like, your actions do set an example. And I think in the respect of like racism and comment sections, I just didn't want to engage with any of those things at all. So much so that I was like, nah, I don't need to do anything. And so for a long time, I never took the time to moderate my comment sections. Actually, I have a bit of a story time. I never took the time to moderate a comment section ever. Mm-hmm. Like racism happened, but like, whatever. Like I would just move on. I'm not terminally online. So like normally when I make content, like I post and then I dip. Like I'm not the type that will sit and scroll. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not the type that will sit and like scroll for hours. Like, you know, you'll check in the first hour to see comments, get your beginning engagement going. Mm-hmm. But after that, like I'm trying to go work on another project or engage in my life or like, mm-hmm. you know, separate my work-life balance, you know?
Make food.
Exactly. Yeah. Live a life. Live. Exactly.
Yeah.
But that said, there was a situation that came up where some of my friends came under fire because of their lack of action on a post that I was in that got a lot of racism. Mm. So people like screenshotted and like pointed to the negativity in these comments and essentially created this sentiment of the idea that like, oh, if you're going to create with Black creators, you have to be willing to defend them and you can't like let these things exist and so on. Mm-hmm. What was interesting here is I spoke about this exact thing with my friends and the people that were involved in the situation. And I shared with them my perspective. I was like, you know, I've never moderated my comment sections, so I don't expect you to. Like, if you want to, you can, but I'm not going to put that on you. Like, again, these people are wrong. Like, I don't need you to go out and try to fight them or really take any action because I wouldn't do that myself. Mm-hmm. So you're good. You can just leave it. But that's where optics kind of get complicated. Mm-hmm. So at that point, yeah, there was a sentiment that was built around the idea that it's like, oh, like these people don't care about you. And if they're going to let these things persist, blah, 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 like really blaming those people for what people expected were their choices. Mm-hmm. And what was fascinating is I tried to step forward to clarify like, hey, if you're going to be mad with anybody, be mad with me. Because these people are simply following the direction that I gave them. Mm-hmm. But that created more problems because then people were like, well, why are you telling them this? Like, why are you so you feel the need? I remember somebody in particular was like, so you feel the need to like defend your white friends, but not to defend Black people. And I was like, okay, I see where you're coming from. But at the same time, again, to my perspective, I was like, well, I don't think Black people need defense because, again, these people are wrong. Like, they're simply incorrect. It's like, why do I need to go and tell them, like, oh, I have myself and other people who look like me have value, and that's already inherently true. Whereas in comparison to this situation, there is an incorrect assumption being made about the people that I engage with that's being furthered, that is incorrect inherently and will eventually potentially impact these friends. So that is something that I should engage with. But that said, in that circumstance, I had a lot of conversations with a lot of people. I was like, you know what, here, let me hear your perspective. Mm-hmm. And I had some people definitely held me accountable, but some people also presented to me maybe a good middle ground, because one of the things that I pitched as well was like, well, you know, if I were to guarantee that I'm going to spend 2 or so hours like moderating comments every time something like this happens, in all honesty, that takes away from my opportunity to do other things. Like, additionally, like, who knows about the potential impact to like my mental health if I'm more actively sitting in here and like seeing all this negativity, XYZ, like, what about all these ways that this could impact my ability to even represent in the way I do? Like, mm-hmm. what is more important? Mm-hmm. And I think I got a bit of a mix up there. Like, some people suggested, they're like, well, I don't think you should try to move in this space like you're moving if you don't want to recognize the importance of this. Like, I don't think you should guest at cons and you should do XYZ if mm-hmm. you're not going to be a representative in this space. And at first I was like, you know what, fine. And I think that circumstance, I wouldn't say I was like mad about it, but it was just like, I cosplay out of, and especially at this time, I was cosplaying in like passion and like having fun, just making things that I wanted to because it felt good. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't want the impact of these other situations and scenarios to like weigh that down in a way that I thought would negatively impact me. At the same time, wow, this is a long story, but at the same time, I also felt so oddly burdensome to my friends that did not look like me. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, hey, dude, like, one, this isn't a kind of negativity that you see often. And the correlation from your perspective is that when Chris is in a video, then I get this. Mm-hmm. And so in that respect, the simple, most straightforward, arguably heartless and least empathetic way to think about it, though, is like, well, if I cut out Chris, then I cut out this negativity. And like, I could understand that perspective. It's incredibly, again, like, so it's cold, but it's not unreasonable. Reasonable is not the right word, but it's not
unrelatable. I think I understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it's like,
but it's a matter of whether or not these people are truly your friends.
Exactly.
And are willing to.
Exactly.
Lift you up.
Exactly. And that was the thing that I needed to like talk about with them as well. Like I shared this perspective as well. I was like, you know, I feel like I would completely understand if you were like, hey, Chris, like maybe we'll make less content together because this is just creating this circumstance that I want to deal with and so on. And it made me really sad. I was like, damn, dude, it sucks to say that, but like, I get it. Like it's a negativity that I don't enjoy. So, mm-hmm. And I look like I look. So like if this is even further removed from you. And so I could understand you not wanting to deal with it. I really could. But fortunately, all my friends are my friends. And they are like, shut the fuck up. No.
Yeah, we have your back.
Exactly. Like, yeah. No, we would never, like, in all honesty, like, I did want to moderate anyway. And I did go do so because I just thought it wasn't right, X, Y, Z, and so forth. So I was proven wrong in a couple of ways that I didn't expect to be, but also at the same time, they're really beneficial and helped mm-hmm. me reaffirm my relationships with people that I cared about and so on. At the same time, I learned about moderation tactics that were less active and more passive, like preemptively moderating things or like finding specific keywords. Fortunately, a lot of racists aren't very original. So if you normally like the first couple comments that come in are like the same things that will be said constantly.
Right.
So, or like stupid iterations of those things.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it does take a little more time. Or like when I talk to people, I have to be like, hey, by the way, I'm cosplaying a character that doesn't have dark skin in real life. So just a heads up, this might come through.
Yeah.
If it does, like, let me know. I will say it's like weird to like send my friends a list of like slurs to like block. It's weird to sit and write like my cosplay names and then like followed by the N-word or any kind of other slur I can think of and then like shoot a list of that to my homies, be like, hey, can you just drop this in the keyword blocks? Like that's an experience that I think like a lot of people don't understand or will never perceive, especially mm-hmm. in this space. But it was a learning experience to say the very least. Sorry, that was a lot, but
that's okay. That's what
wild,
this is
it's like, oh, so
for. It's for you to have the floor and
thank
for you to express yourself. So thank you
yeah.
for all of that.
Of course. It felt good to like, I haven't thought about and like actively engaged about this since this whole situation kind of took place. And it was intense at the time. And I took a break from just content generally as I wanted to sit and work through it. But I think I feel a lot more confident about where I feel. I will say it's interesting because as prevalent as negativity on the internet can be, it's interesting the spaces that I expect it to show up that it does not at all. So
really?
Vash the Stampede is not a canonically dark-skinned character, nor is Hal from Howl's Moving Castle. Mm. But those two cosplays that I've done are some of my most beloved and have never seen any racism
really?
On any content I've ever posted for either of them. And
wow.
It's so interesting. It's like, wow.
That is interesting.
So it's fascinating to think about like that kinds of communities of people who would gravitate toward those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see why those people would probably not be racist and bigoted. You know, like if
right.
you like Ghibli films, like you're probably pretty chill.
Yeah.
You know, like like Trigun is another, like Vash is such like a silly little dude. Like if you like Trigun,
yeah.
like you're probably not a piece of shit, you know? So it's just a fascinating thing to perceive. But for example, like Gojo, oh man, that's crazy time. Crazy time.
Yeah.
But JJK fans are also like oddly intense, so it doesn't it kind of makes sense in a way almost. But it's funny, we also mentioned this because I do a panel at cons sometimes that's about diversity in the cosplay space.
Mm-hmm.
And what I kind of summarize all this to say, all of this into, is the idea that some people just have such limited imaginations that their brains can literally not make space for an iteration of something that they don't expect. And when something like that is presented to them, instead of trying to adapt to it or, I don't know, just not be in someone's asshole about shit all the time. Like
mm-hmm.
these people like just sit there like seething, like, this is not what it is in my head. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? It's not like this in my head. And it's like, bro, please chill.
And the only way that they know how to release the energy is to furiously type it into the void.
It's wild. So again, it's more, I would say, if anything, out of the time that I've spent and the energy and experiences that I've garnered, I think it's most fascinating just watching people. Like, it's such another being a content creator is such an interesting perspective to people watch.
Yeah.
And so now that I'm past it, I know what I need to do, how to execute in these spaces and places. It's just fascinating to be like, oh, I expect this will happen. Oh, yeah, that happened. Oh, wow, what's going on over here? Oh, that's so interesting. Like, oh. So yeah. Anyways.
A very unfair burden to carry.
Oh, for sure. Yes, at the same time, and I apologize in advance if this sounds or comes across arrogantly,
no,
but I do think I am the right person to balance the energy. Like, I'm not a very intensely reactive or incendiary person at all. Mm-hmm. I'm also not the type to really sit and stew or like hold a grudge intensely. Like, my ADHD is the kind where like me being mad is like 15 seconds and I forget it. Like, and even me being mad is like not really anger, it's more like an irritation where I'm like, and then I move on. So on the plus side, and I'm also really good at articulating myself and my feelings and challenging people who I don't think are sharing something correctly or who are saying the things that I think they mean to say. And so I think that patience is really important when confronted with a challenge such as that one. So in that respect, though it took a second, I think I can set a better example and discuss and engage in a better way that I think is not only conducive for my orientation to the circumstance, but also helps give enough context and perspective to other people that they can still come to their own conclusions and recognize that they don't have to execute the same way I do, that they can be more intense or less intense. It's all about what makes you more comfortable at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And so in that respect, I think that's something that's also healing for the community generally.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Well, again, a lot of words.
I appreciate you sharing all of that.
Yeah, I haven't gotten the chance to express, but thank
you. Well, I'm glad that you felt comfortable to do so here.
Yeah, of course.
I appreciate all of your insight into that too.
Of course. Hopefully that gives you perspective that you may not have heard so thoroughly before as well.
Yeah.
So if and when you're ever in another space or place, you like have these things in mind. If we ever make content in a similar circumstance, you'd be like, oh, Chris talked about this. Okay.
So, I'm ready and I'll be ready for it
exactly.
too. So again, thank you for all of the insight.
Of course.
On the heels of talking about cosplay and all the difficulties that you've had to overcome, I'd love to talk about like what your journey into cosplay started, how it started, and like what little nerdy things you were into growing up, and how it translated into like where you are today. Like, what were you obsessed with as a kid that you loved?
My lifelong hyperfixation has been Transformers. I love – actually, I would have worn a Transformers shirt today, but I love
– it's JoJo, right?
It is indeed. that's – which is my other hyperfixation, actually, in relation to cosplay. So we'll get here.
Okay, perfect.
Transformers is like my favorite thing as a kid ever. And Optimus Prime is like – I grew up without – with I was raised by a single parent. And so I like to say that like Optimus Prime was like my father figure in a way. I've gotten to say that to Peter Cullen, which is crazy sick. But Optimus Prime was like my role model generally. And in all honesty, like being younger, my mom actually used to work in events. Mm-hmm. She used to do like radio and such as well. So she's always been a really thematic and outwardly kind of expressive and space creating kind of person. As such, like that theming goes everywhere. So my mom was the type to like really encourage us, like get Halloween costumes that we really liked or like make things that we wanted to. Like my sister loves donuts. And so for Halloween one year, she literally wanted to be a donut. And my mom was like, let's make it. And
we're
like,
all right,
cool, log in. So I had a parent who was just down to like create something that they didn't have, which I think was a really, really important experience to have really early. It was the knowledge that like if something doesn't exist, like I can do it if I wanted to. So that was really early. But yeah, my mom would dress me up a lot and it was just fun to explore and like play around with things and to really like dive into the things that I enjoyed. So the first like costuming related stuff I did wasn't really until I was like in college and had my own money, but I went out of my way to get like a custom Frozone costume made from The Incredibles when I was in college. And then after that, I got like a custom black Power Ranger costume made as well, just because like I wanted to wear those things. Like I had seen Incredibles, I liked it, and with the school I was in, I was rollerblading a lot, and I was like, you know, it'd be so funny as if I was like in Frozone rollerblading around campus.
That
like that'd
incredible.
Be so fun.
Yeah.
And I just thought that would be just a silly thing to do. And it was, and it felt good. And I had friends who also liked dressing up. Like one of my friends who actually got me into cosplay eventually has always been like a big Halloween person. And so we were just, our house and our friends were just locked in to just have fun. But that said, I've always just been expressive in that way and not afraid to be expressive in that way. But as far as actual cosplay, like the first time I would say like I cosplayed. A friend of mine got me on the JoJo's train, and I really, really enjoyed JoJo's. And she was doing, her name's Olivia, by the way. A shout out, Olivia. But she was cosplaying. She was doing a cosplay group from part three of JoJo's, which is Stardust Crusaders. And she was like, hey, I know that you're in that part of the show right now. Like, do you want to come to like your first convention? We're going to LA Comic Con. Like, I think you'd really enjoy this, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? That'd be really fun. Like, let me see what I can try to cook up and see like what we can do. And there's a character in that show called named Muhammad Avdal. And he's super, super cool. He's like an Egyptian fortune teller. He's super sick. He's like one of the first characters you meet in part three. And it's super dope. He's so fun. He's so cool. And I was like, you know, I want to be this guy. Like, I want to do this cosplay. And I had seen that nobody had really cosplayed him. I think there were like maybe one or two, but there wasn't a lot prevalent in that space yet. And I was like, you know what? I think I can workshop this and make something that like I haven't seen before, but that also like does this character justice. And so like I started crafting, like I made his robe. He has like this big orange robe that he wears. And like I had a friend help me sew that because I had no idea how to work a sewing machine at the time. He also has outside his pants, like trunks, almost like Superman almost. But he has like that same thing on top of his linen pants that he has. So like I made those things as well. He has this big, huge necklace that is also earrings that are like all these like gold discs that go around his like neck. And it was just a bunch of silly things, just very JoJo's outfit. But eventually like I was able to put it together enough that I was like, okay, I think it's ready for the convention. And looking back at that, the first iteration of that, I was like, wow, the journey is crazy. Because I was like, I had just done all my efforts were so minimal, but at the time seemed so significant. I was like, wow, I just did so much. Looking back, I'm like, I could have done this. But I went to the convention and we got to meet one of the voice actors for the show. And he was like, dude, I never see anybody cosplay Avdal and you look great. You did such a good job. And I was like, oh my God, thank you so much. So I was just excited that I got to go do this thing, be a part of it with my friends, be in a fandom space, which I've never been to a convention before. So I was like, yo, this is incredible. And again, meet somebody who is part of, who made this thing that I love and have them be like, you look great, dude. Oh, holy shit. I was like, wow. It was the best way to like continue to motivate me. So as soon as that convention was over, I went back home and I was like, there are some adjustments I can make to this. And I made it better and adjusted a couple things, like was a bit more thorough, finished off some pieces more thoroughly.
And was that your first con you ever went to?
It was my first con ever.
Okay.
And what was crazy though is also at the time I was working for Amazon in like operations leadership at the time. And I had a boss who, and TikTok was still like, relatively early. This was like 2021-ish. But my boss, like at work, he was like, hey, Chris, are you on TikTok? And I was like, no, I think I'm a bit too old for that. Like, it seems like something for like younger people.
Amazing.
And he was like, I don't know, man. I just feel like that's a good space for you. Like, yeah, I don't know, check it out maybe. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And so like a year later when I had done a cosplay and my friend was like, you should get on TikTok. The reason I made a TikTok was because I was in the background with my cosplay in a bunch of her content and a bunch of people were like, yo, who's the Avdal? Like, who's that guy? He looks really cool. And she was like, oh, he doesn't have XYZ, blah, blah, blah. But eventually she was like, you should really make your own account. I was like, okay, cool. The second video I ever posted on TikTok hit like 2 million views. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. Like, holy smokes. And I was like blown away. I was like, wow, this is, in retrospect, I was like, this is easy.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you mean.
Like, bro, what are you talking about? People have a hard time with this. Like, I got 2 million. I haven't even touched this app before. But
until they get you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hooked you.
but at the time, I was like, okay, this is cool. And, like, people really loved the cosplay. I was excited that I felt like I did the character justice. And it felt really cool just to represent in that way. And so, like, I continued with that, like, you know, made a couple more videos, like, try to make some transitions, you know, be cool and shit. I was like, okay, cool. And then I was like, you know what? Let me keep going. Mm-hmm. And I did another character from JoJo's. I did Okuyasu, who's from part 4 of the series. And I made, like, my first looping video. It was when that audio that was like, bow,
bow, bow. Oh, boom. Yeah.
It was like everybody's making loop videos to that. But mm-hmm. I made a looping video for Okuyasu, and that video hit like 5 million or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like blown away. I was like, this is so cool. Mm-hmm. I guess I should keep doing this. Like, yeah, holy smokes. Yeah. And so from there, it was kind of just like this passion project that just continued moving forward. So I was continuing to get through JoJo's, like finding new characters that I liked. And I was like, I'm going to cosplay that one now, and just mm-hmm. continuing to move forward. And so, that just kept growing and developing in like this really cool way. Like, I was gaining followers and like making connections. When my friend Olivia first introduced me to TikTok, she sent me content of like some creators that were also cosplayers that was like, hey, this is kind of how people do stuff in this space. Like, so, you know, take these people as examples. And I was like, okay, cool. And one of them was my friend Kayla, Renee Goddess. She's an incredible cosplayer as well. Super funny. But she was in one of the videos. She was one of the people my friend Olivia sent me content of as an example. And Kayla ended up like following me back on like Twitter, like really early. And I messaged her and I was like, oh my gosh, I just want to say, like, I love your content. You're so cool. Like, I appreciate you. Like, I'm so excited to see what you do. And she said something so nice to me. I wish I had the message like on hand, but she was like, oh no, you're good. Like, I already think like what you've already done is so cool. And I can't wait to see how you continue to contribute to this space. Like, I think you've got something cool going on, Chris. So, like, I'm here cheering you on. I was like, dude, sick. Like, I was just so heartwarmed. And to get that kind of confirmation and reaffirmation so early, I was like, okay, I got to keep doing this then. Like, let's lock in. Let's see what mm-hmm. else we can do. And so from there, it was just like, you know, leveling up in the process, in the space, trying to figure out how to work with new materials and bring new, different things to life. I think something that's really interesting and like, Black characters in particular is like Black hairstyles. One are always drawn a really interesting way that might not be super consistent with what things look like in real life, but in an interesting way that presents like a fun challenge kind of. So it was fun trying to adapt characters' hairstyles to things that made sense for me. And I think that was one thing that people really enjoyed that I was doing really early. I was like, oh, wow, he's figured out how to adapt this. Or like, oh, how'd you make that wig? Like, how'd you get this hairstyle and so on? Just like finding the answers that I think were part of the barriers that made some of these characters like harder to cosplay in a way. Mm-hmm. And so like displaying like, hey, no, there's a way to do it. Like we can figure it out. Like, let me show you. And so, yeah, then things just kind of kept going and progressing. Eventually, I saw Across the Spider-Verse. And I literally watched it at 8:30 in the morning on a Friday, like the Friday it came out, because I wanted to see it as soon as humanly possible.
Really?
Yeah, and I watched it in 4DX. So I'm like 8:30 in the morning, like, it was awesome. But it was also my first 4DX movie. It was crazy. Like, I was like sliding out of my chair. Like, it was insane. But it was super fun. But as soon as I left, as soon as Hobie came on screen, I was like, this guy's so fucking cool, dude. Ain't no way. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I left the theater, I was like, I gotta figure out how to cosplay this dude. And at the time, it was like a month before Anime Expo. And I was like, you know what? I don't even know what my third cosplay is going to be, but it's going to be this. Like, I got to figure it out. I got to work it. And so I literally just locked in for like a month straight and was able to debut that cosplay at Anime Expo. And it really popped off. It truly was like a truly viral moment in the coolest of ways. But that cosplay like really, really changed my life. Like, all my platform followings like doubled within like a month, which was really, really cool. And that just became like this really cool thing that was really prevalent. It got me in contact with some of, I think, the most important people to my current like journey and experience right now. Put me on like the radars of other creators. That was also really, really cool. And just really like like kicked the door open to opportunity in a lot of really, really cool, fun ways. Mm-hmm. And so from there, I've just been trying to keep up. And that challenge has been a challenge in some ways and spaces. I think growing really quickly is particularly stressful because I feel like you want to satisfy and keep up with everything that's going on. Like all these people are here all of a sudden, like you still want to mm-hmm. satisfy all of them. All these people, all these other creators are doing all these other things. So when all of that was happening, I was like, okay, let me stream. Let me make a Discord. Let me make a community. Like let me open all these things because there's all these people and they all want to do this stuff. Like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I think it was really exciting at the time, but I think it moved too fast, too much too fast. So it was fun for a while, but then I think I was trying to be in too many places at once that I got a bit sidetracked and had to like slow down naturally.
Yeah, it's very overwhelming, especially when you have no one telling you what to do or how to do it.
Exactly.
And you're just kind of on the path by yourself and you are worried that at any time it could go away because mm-hmm. you don't know what the right thing to do is.
Yes.
So you want to do everything as fast as possible.
Exactly.
And it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. With that in mind, like any piece of advice I would give anybody is take it one thing at a time. Like if you're actively doing something, like this might sound kind of harsh, but like the way creators create spaces is you have to be offering something that's at least slightly different than something else going on, whether that be like the quality of your content or like your particular sense of humor, or like how you approach certain things that like separates you from other things. That's great. And if you are truly doing that, people will hang around. They will want to watch your growth and development. And like the homies that you have, they're like the day one fans that are there, they will stay. So just take it slow, like get good at what you want to do and then move on to the next thing. Solidify mm-hmm. yourself and like your one talent or skill or feel incredibly comfortable there and then add to your plate. Don't try to like grow in like seven different places at once. Focus on what makes the most sense for you and then move on to the next thing once you've got that regimented mm-hmm. in a way that makes sense that you can almost keep up with passively.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be, I think, the best way to not overwhelm yourself, but still create your space and slowly spread your tendrils throughout the communities you want to be a part of.
Yeah, I completely agree with that 100%. Yeah. I'd also love to add to it.
Please.
I think that the number one thing that prevents people from having a full-blown career in content creation is mm-hmm. their consistency.
Yep.
And if you are trying to grow in seven different places all at once and dropping all of the plates that you're trying to hold.
Exactly.
You're not able to be consistent in the areas mm-hmm. that you need to be mm-hmm. to grow
exactly.
certain ways.
Exactly.
So if your goal is to grow your social media platforms and mm-hmm. you're worried about streaming and mm-hmm. and setting up a Discord and mm-hmm. being everywhere all at once, mm-hmm. you might not be able to be consistent on those platforms, which is like the thing that needs to be nurtured the most in the beginning.
Exactly.
So consistency is really, really important in that regard as well.
Very real. Very real.
To take what you said and build upon it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think something that I learned about myself when I was at I don't remember if it was after, I think it was before Hobie actually, which is crazy. But I was working for Amazon previously. And again, I was in operations leadership and I've always been really creative, not necessarily in cosplay spaces, but my creativity has always like oozed out from wherever I could figure out where to fit it. But at work, my job was just not inherently creative at all. Mm. So my creativity, I tried to execute everywhere I possibly could, but I was obviously developing in a way that my peers didn't really know what to do with because none of them were in creative fields either. So they mm-hmm. could be like, that's really cool, Chris, but didn't know like where to tell me to go next. Mm-hmm. So as TikTok was moving forward and like I was creating these platforms, I actually ended up quitting my job at Amazon like way earlier than I should have. But I ended up quitting my job because I was like, oh, I got this. Like, I think I understand my voice. I understand what I want to provide. Like, I've been consistently like, you know, moving forward in this space. Like, I think I can do this. And so for a while I did, but something that I realized about myself was that I am not a good self-manager. Like, that is just not my strong suit. I can bring the charisma. I can bring the energy. I can bring the engagement. I can bring the creativity, but I have such a hard time organizing myself. And when you're trying to be especially a content creator or any kind of self-employed person, you need to be able to manage yourself and your deadlines, or at least have a team enough that can hold you accountable in some way. Because if not, like, you'll just watch everything slowly crumble around you mm-hmm. as you can't keep up with what you've got going on. And I think that was something that I started perceiving, unfortunately. I was having fun, and there would be times where I was like really locked in. I was like, oh, 2 weeks. I was like hype. I was like, oh, I can make so much stuff. I have so many ideas, blah, 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 blah. But then I would get distracted and sidetracked, and I'd be like, oh, I should give myself a break. But I wasn't creating enough to really do that. And so I was all over the place. And that was not conducive to my forward momentum. So that's another thing too to understand, is like your consistency also has to be in like your own self-regulation. Because without that, like again, there's so many things going on that you have to manage and be aware of that it can be incredibly draining and just tiresome to be on top of all of it consistently. And if you need to rely on that for your money and your livelihood, that can either one, it can light a fire under some people. It really can. But at the same time, it can also stress you out way more mm-hmm. and take you out of like the creative flow and authentic organicness that makes creativity really fun. Mm-hmm. And it can turn the hobby that you tried to turn into a job into this thing that you don't want it to be, that feels kind of hollow because you're creating less so because you want to, but because you have to. And eventually you'll get to a point where you have to create, but you've been doing it long enough that you know how to create and where mm-hmm. to create and when to create, and you can be efficient and effective with it. Mm-hmm. But again, you got to solidify that orientation and that engagement before you like jump off the deep end and be like, I got this.
Yeah.
So I learned that lesson as well. That was another piece of consistency that I had to learn mm-hmm. In real time the hard way. So now it's like a lot better balance, but still very true. And I think something I'm still trying to work on is consistency.
Again, we all are. I know that I said that like I'm really, really good at it. I'm also not that good at it, but I understand it. Yeah. And I understand the point of it what we're supposed to all be doing. But in reality, sometimes it's hard to put into practice with everything mm-hmm. else going on.
Yes, exactly.
But knowing that is like the point mm-hmm. is important, right?
Exactly.
Because then at least if you're straying away from it, you could get back to center easier.
Exactly. Yes. You have like a unifying like goal or understanding of like where you should be. So you always have like a home to go to kind of.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of it is not being afraid to fail or look dumb.
Mm.
Because a lot of figuring out like what your niche, what your content should be or what it is comes from trying things and not liking what you're doing or liking it but wanting to tweak it a little bit. And without trying, you won't know where you want to go and how you want to move.
Very true. To that point, actually, like I think to your point about consistency, I do think there are interesting like different kinds of consistency that can all be equally fruitful depending on what you're offering. Mm-hmm. Like your consistency can be, you're the kind of creator that posts every single day and that's your consistency. Mm-hmm. And because you're posting every single day, you're obviously, not obviously, but you could shoot for quality over quantity, or whatever you're sharing every day is something that you're sharing about yourself that's consistently you. Or you could be somebody who delivers a certain level of quality often. So like maybe you only post once a month, but when you do, like, that shit's the craziest thing the world's ever seen. So like you're setting an expectation, you're delivering on that for your audience. And that's really, really important. And understanding like where that comes from and what that looks like for you. I was going somewhere with that, but I lost my train of thought halfway through.
You were cooking.
I know I was. Oh God. Oh, dude,
it was cooking.
ADHD brands are so hard.
It was good.
My brain is rough. Okay, hold on. Let me try to recenter for 1 second.
Yeah. I will expand upon that while you think.
Please.
that is exceptionally true. I think creating a brand in like the marketing advertising space is setting up the expectations and like positioning yourself within everybody's minds a certain way.
Exactly.
So if it is, like you said, if it doesn't have to be posting every single day, it could be posting this particular type of quality. But knowing how to optimize that is very, very important.
Exactly. So, I remember what I was going to say.
Yes. Go ahead.
I was going to say that like something that I thought I was consistent about, I thought was a kind of consistency that I needed to do. I wanted to be like a consistently, a quality consistency person. So it's like, maybe I don't post all the time, mm-hmm. but when I do, that shit slaps. Mm-hmm. But I've realized that with that in mind, I'll get too caught up sometimes and I could maintain a more daily consistency, but I don't because I nitpick too hard. Like the ideas that I think are funny or good and like I'll make something that I think is cool in the moment and be like, I don't know if I want to post that. But what I will say is like, just post it. Like post your drafts, like empty your drafts, like anything mm-hmm. that you have, just put it somewhere, especially if it's not something that you plan to reshoot. Like just whatever you've got, just put it somewhere because it's mm-hmm. not going to hurt you unless it's really bad. unless it's like terrible and the world like hates you for it. No, I'm just kidding. But even then, like any kind of individual expression that's not bigoted or outwardly rude is an expression of you and you should be proud of that. And that's part of your creative journey as well. Something else, sorry, dang, so many tangents, but a job that I worked for a short period of time was I worked for a TikTok live talent agency. Okay. So for a while, it was actually my job to engage with TikTok creators, help them analyze their content and figure out how they could engage better. Mm-hmm. Or what else they could add to their content to help diversify it a bit more. And something that a lot of people don't recognize or are being better about now is that your personality is one of those things that like no one else can replicate. Mm-hmm. So you should share yourself often. And part of what yourself is the mistakes or the silly off things that you also do. And you know, some people, I think, you know, you could be unlucky and not have a particularly inherently charismatic personality. Maybe your sense of humor is a little off. So this is, you take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. But odds are that like even the silly goofs that you have are still part of your personality that people want to see. Mm-hmm. And especially being a content creator is all about the kind of relationship and connection you can develop with mm-hmm. your audience. Mm-hmm. So it's fun for your audience to get to see those fumbles or to see like you make a hilarious piece of content one day and then the next one just is not it. But because your community has been there for both, they can like politely roast you like, oh, this one's not it, fam. But like, yeah. That's still engagement. That's still opportunity for you yeah. to connect with your audience and be like, you know what, you write, you know, like, and have just a mm-hmm. fun conversation that's not only feels transparent to them, but also feels authentic to you mm-hmm. And presents you an opportunity to like, you know, reflect on yourself openly and be like, yeah, you know, that one wasn't as funny as the last one, but you know, hey, we're trying, you know? And I think that yeah. orientation people are a lot warmer to mm-hmm. than the idea that like everything you're gonna do is perfect or like that you just are so good at what you're doing that you can't ever make a mistake. Like nobody's really like that, dude. And mm-hmm. I think the world likes seeing that more often. It's one of the reasons I think TikTok does so well because that app feels so authentic most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so people gravitate toward the authenticity.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well. Yeah. Even if it's not as funny as the first thing, yeah. You being a true, real human being is what's going to make people relate to you. And exactly. it's going to keep people around. And mm-hmm. yeah.
Hell yeah.
Totally. well, you said something earlier I'd love to kind of come back to and yeah. expand upon. You worked at Amazon and you quit yeah. your job. What did you go yeah. to school for?
Oh, yeah. I went to school. My degree is in cultural anthropology.
Okay.
That was not my intention when I went to school. I wanted to be a communication major. I transferred to my school. So I did my first 2 years at community college. And then I wanted to transfer to be a communication major. Just like every single person who potentially wants to explore any kind of entertainment.
Yeah, I am a communications major. Everybody does. Actually, when I talk to people on here, yeah. that is what people Dude, have most of the time yeah. is a communication. Degree.
Yeah,
so funny.
It's so funny. It's hilarious. That's it. That's what I wanted. But the way that process worked at the school I went to was more complicated than I thought. And I didn't take my first year after I transferred as seriously as I should have. So I didn't make it into the major that I wanted, unfortunately. But it ended up making me pivot to anthropology, which I didn't expect to study. But in retrospect, I think has actually been one of the most beneficial forms of knowledge and like forms of knowledge and training, I think, that I really benefit from. Mm-hmm. And for anybody who doesn't know what anthropology is the study of human evolution from the beginning of time until now. Like everything that has ever impacted or any process of which humans have existed on the planet and changed throughout that existence is what anthropology covers. And as it sounds, cultural anthropology is the cultural exploration of that analysis and evolution. There's also paleontology and archaeology. Well, paleontology is for dinosaurs, but there's archaeology and there's also biological anthropology as well. But cultural anthropology is all about systems and spaces and communities and impacts and how to understand a space that you are not a part of. One, how to actively and productively observe a space that you're not a part of, how to integrate yourself into such a space without judgment from your previous cultural perspective and experience, mm-hmm. and how to integrate into a community that may be different from your own, but also how to be intentional about the information that you're gathering, comparing it to your own cultural perspective, and looking to be a truly curious individual about the opportunity to develop a new experience and perspective. And in that respect, that is so relevant to any connection you make with any human being ever.
Yeah.
Because people are the products of their environments. So much of who people are and how they engage in the world makes sense once you understand their history or you take the time to observe their relationships and engagements with other people and spaces and places. Mm-hmm. And so in that respect, I wouldn't ever say that. I think it's hard. I think some people think that like having a strategy in a conversation can be manipulative. And I think to an extent it can be. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, trying to be an effective communicator, you need to be aware of the inputs and outputs that are most likely to get you closest to the kind of conversation you're looking to have. And that kind of conversation is dependent upon your intention. But theoretically, if your intention is good, like you want to know the things that are going to lead you to having a good conversation. Mm-hmm. And those things are the perspectives and understanding of who you're about to engage with, right? Where they came from, what their backgrounds are, maybe how they feel about certain topics or issues or substances or circumstances. So at the very least, you know how to navigate through that space, not in the interest of being anything but transparent or encouraging your conversant to be anything but transparent, but rather so that you can make sure that you can engage in a space productively.
Yeah, you're not manipulating the person. You are creating the safest environment to have a conversation and dialogue.
Yeah. Yes, that's a great way to put it. Yes, exactly. And so I think, again, anthropology has been incredibly helpful in helping me do that. And I work in a lot of leadership-related orientations and spaces. And I think that's one of the reasons so many of my subordinates or associates that I've had over my professional career have really fucked with me. Like, I think I'm a really cool leader. But it's because like I meet people where they're at. I'm like, hey, tell me about what you got going on. Like, before I even talk to somebody about my role in relation to them, I'm like, hey, I want to know you. Like, tell me about what you like, what you do outside of XYZ and so on, because those are the moments that, one, make people feel seen, which mm-hmm. already develops and builds trust. And again, not in a manipulative way, but more so it's like, we need to work together moving forward. So I would love for you to trust me. So here's mm-hmm. my first step forward in creating that relationship. Mm-hmm. And people respond positively to those things. Mm-hmm. And in that respect, once you have that knowledge and you're using it effectively, then there's not really a reason that your spaces and engagements shouldn't be relatively seamless or mm-hmm. thorough or straightforward. And it does take a level of patience that I think is too much sometimes, but the ends justify the means. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm really good at having positive engagements with people, and it's because of that experience. Mm-hmm. Sorry, again, long answers. My goodness.
No, it's very interesting. This is what it's all about. I mean, this is your episode. It's about you and your journey, how you got to where you are. Yeah. So, your job at Amazon, mm-hmm. what was it? Like, what were you doing as like a
It's such a funny experience.
Corporate man.
When I talk about Amazon, like everybody kind of jumps to like assumptions of what that means. And it's funny because I worked in a really specific, particularly explorative part of the company. But have you ever been to like a Whole Foods and seen like a Amazon counter where you could do like returns and stuff?
Yeah.
At a Whole Foods. So that concept started as something very different. That concept started as something called Amazon Campus. And essentially it was Amazon's interest to create like these brick and mortar locations where people could come and like do Amazon in person. And they were first focused around heavily populated and dense Amazon user areas, which were schools at the time. Like a lot of students, you always had like a rotating community of people who were heavy Amazon users most of the time. Mm-hmm. So they started launching these at different school locations. And my school, I went to UC Santa Barbara, and my school was the third location they ever opened one of these places at. And it was the first on the West Coast. So I was just an associate at one of these locations. I just needed a part-time job. I just moved to Santa Barbara, like, and this place happened to open. And I was like, okay. But my role at that time was very much more customer service oriented. At our location, you walked in and you couldn't order anything from us, but we had a bunch of lockers in our store that were all like themed and designed. It looked very minimally aesthetic and Amazon-y, but you could come pick up items. You could do returns in person. Mm-hmm. We could do in-person customer service at the time. So if you had an issue with your account, you could talk to us face to face. And it was all about bringing like the high wealth sought and thought of reputation of Amazon customer service to the real world. It was mm-hmm. like, oh, instead of talking to someone on the phone, go to an Amazon store. And that was really cool. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, I'm really good at customer service. So I enjoyed that job a lot. And it was really fun, but it was really iterative. This project was super new. Mm-hmm. So we really had all the money that we wanted for like whatever we were trying to do. Like Amazon really was trying to just throw stuff at the wall and see what worked. Mm-hmm. And so in my tenure during school, I kind of matriculated as an associate and got better. And eventually, right when I graduated, my boss at the time ended up leaving her position. And I was the most tenured associate on staff. And mm-hmm. I had really good relationships with all of the team. These are all my homies. Like, we're all like 22, 23. Like, if we're not working, we're like out, like getting drunk with each other, out just fucking around, having a uh-huh. great time. But I was the most tenured person on the team, and my team really trusted me. So I went to my boss's boss at the time, and her name was Emily. And I was like, hey, Emily, I know that I'm like really young and I literally just graduated, but like, I think I would be a really good site manager for this location, if that's okay. Would you recommend I apply? And she was very real with me. She was like, honestly, Chris, like, you live by the beach in California, and you have like this little bubble of perfection where you live, I'm certain there are going to be many other people who are trying to apply for this role. But go for it. Yeah. Do your thing.
Why not?
Exactly. And so I was like, okay, cool. So I did. And long story short, I got it. And it was really cool. The biggest problems or the biggest issues I had to confront were a lot of the upper leadership was like, hey, we know you've been working here for 2 years. Like, all these associates are your homies. How are you going to manage that relationship? Mm-hmm. And what I had told them, I was like, you know, I think I genuinely have really transparent and open relationships with all the people who work here in such a way that I can separate my position with them as their leader and their friend. And I don't think that would be an issue, genuinely. Mm-hmm. I think so much so I can create such positive relationships that I'm willing to say that I could make this location perform better than it ever has in 6 months or something like that.
Yeah.
So I really came through. I was like, I got this. Mm-hmm. And on the plus side, that's exactly what happened. Everything went super well. Like, my team really trusted me. And we just had fun. Like, I really sat with them and I was just real. I was like, guys, check it. Like, this is our job. These are the rules that I need to enforce sometimes, but I don't really care about them. So as long as we don't abuse them and nobody else points them out, like, we have wiggle room here, but mm-hmm. I need us to all perform these essential functions. And as long as we do that, we can do anything, bro. And they were like, okay.
Yeah, I feel cool. Like, you'd be an amazing boss.
Dude, thanks, man.
An amazing boss, an amazing like guidance counselor, teacher, any sort of like leadership position.
It was fun. It was really fun. It was fun not only getting to develop myself, but like helping my other friends develop as well. Being able to like go be drunk with, like, it was, I would go to like parties, and it was funny because some people that were younger than me, because at this time I was a senior, so I had a couple of associates that were like juniors and sophomores that didn't know me when I was still an associate yet, mm-hmm. but we'd go out all together because it was just that was the kind of space we were in. And so I'd be like, people are like, oh, this is my boss. And I'd be like, oh, what's up? I'm like, take like two shots. Like, and so it was just really fun and silly, but I created as much. Another thing that I think is important about any kind of leadership or opportunity you're given is creating more opportunity for others that are important to you. Mm-hmm. So I was salaried at the time, and I told my associates, I was like, check it. My pay is never gonna change. So I'm always gonna try to give you guys as much opportunity to make money as humanly possible, but you gotta roll with me. So mm-hmm. these things have to go well. We can't push it, but just know that that will always be my goal at the end of the day. Like, how can I get you the most paid? Mm-hmm. So I would try to create events as often as possible. I'd be like, we need to do like some kind of engagement with the school and like create relationships. Like, we got to go table at campus. Like, I need 3 people for XYZ hours. I'm like, are you guys down for that? And they're like, yeah. I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
It was just, again, it was like, it was the perfect way to like work with your leadership in such a way that was just beneficial to everyone. And it was so nice. Looking back at that time, I was living my best life. I was making good money. I was like, I salaried right out of college, working with all my best friends, living in the coolest place in the world, feeling the most comfortable. Some of the poems I read to you guys like a couple weeks ago were made out of that headspace, like the headspace where I was like, everything's going so well, dude. I made it through school. I don't have any debt. All my friends love me. I'm doing well at work. Like, sick. And it was really nice.
Yeah. Do you think that applying those same principles to like now doing cosplay and things like that, the idea of lifting each other up and like giving each other as many opportunities as humanly possible to grow and experience things, and then that happening vice versa, taking care of each other?
Yes.
Do you feel like that is still happening in your life with cosplay?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that it's important.
Oh, for sure. 100%. As often as I can. And I think cosplay has not only, I think I've always been the kind of person who's trying to give my friends opportunities. And I tend to just be really outgoing and really forward in a space that I want to move in. So like normally I'll get in, I'll be like, I got you guys. Like even in high school, like I worked at this bowling alley when I was a kid, and I ended up getting like 5 of my friends' jobs there as well. Cause I was like, guys, come on. I got you. But yes, cosplay has been really fun because it's shown me that other people have that same orientation, which is really, really cool. But at the same time, it's been a really awesome kind of exemplification of the power of networking. I think some people kind of almost bastardize that in a way and make it a little too like strategic, or like I'm doing this thing to like extract as much benefit for myself out of it as I can. And I don't think that's wrong per se. Like, hey, your grind is your grind. Like, do what you got to do. But I think that I've been fortunate enough to just have the opportunity to be in spaces surrounded by people that were really cool and transparent and fun, and that I really enjoy and just actively love engaging with. And so getting the opportunity not only to meet them and to make a good impression, but also have them be like, hey, I want this person to come through for this opportunity, and being able to like reciprocate that and be like, hey, I heard about this. Like, are you interested in this? Like, is just the coolest, just the most heartwarming thing ever, especially because they're all things that are indicative or exemplary or indicative of like our interest in like creativity and personality. Like, I don't know. It's different if you like, this might sound kind of rude, but it's different if you like know a guy who's really good at making Excel spreadsheets and you're like, hey, do you wanna make this Excel spreadsheet for me? Like, you're really good at that. But it's fun knowing somebody who's like, oh, I love your personality and I love the way like you impact people so much and that's so important. I would love for you to be in this space because I want you to do that for these people here. Or like, I love your creativity and the way you express yourself inherently, and I feel like it's a thing that only you can do. So please, if you would be willing to do that over here, I would love to pass that opportunity along, and so on. And that feels so good because, again, it's like reinforcing like, I think an expression of the heart, which I think is inherent present in like your personality or especially your creative orientation. Something I've been trying to tell people is like, your creativity, whatever you think about it, you're the only person who can create that way. Somebody might be able to create something really similar or really close to what you make, but they can't make the exact same thing you'll make. So in that respect, like, just make it, like, do it, because no one else can do it the same way. And that's one of the few ways, I think, especially now, like, you can truly contribute like organically and uniquely to the world around you, is just sharing whatever your individual self-expression is, and diving in.
Yeah, totally.
That said, I'm so sorry. I'm glad. That said, I do want to take the opportunity. I've already told this to you, but I want to say thank you, because I think you're a great example of exactly that kind of person in this space. And it makes me so like a long time ago, like the Anime Men music video or whatever was like really cool. I was like, oh my, like, I remember when you were like, oh, I submitted you for this thing. Like, are you interested in this? I was like, oh my God, like the idea, like Danielle would even think of me for this. Oh my God. This is just so fun and exciting. And my heart was so warmed. And then I think we were talking like San Jose, and you were like, oh, like, I've tried to submit you for a couple things, but like, since you live in Vegas now, it's a little harder. Like, that just clicked in my mind and warmed my heart so much. I was like, bro, like the fact that this is like actively happening in the background is just like, oh, just so heartwarming. So again, mm-hmm. thank you for being that positive example of exactly the way we should all engage with and treat each other in this space. Because I think it creates the most warm spaces and opportunities for all of us, but also creates the most warmth and opportunity for the fans and the groups and spaces that we contribute to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Of course.
I think cosplay for me was a space where I got to create a community mm-hmm. full of people mm-hmm. That liked the same things that I did, that mm-hmm. didn't like judge me for those things, and a place where everyone can be themselves. Like recently at GalaxyCon San Jose we were or I think the one before that, the last one we did together.
San Jose? Yeah.
Okay. They're all blending together in my brain right now. I don't remember which GalaxyCon said that. GalaxyCon San Jose, I was talking to somebody and I was like, how's your con going? Mm-hmm. How's your weekend? And he was like, I'm good. I'm home. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, wow. Don't make me cry right here on the con floor. But it's heartwarming to be in a space where everyone can be themselves and feel like they're free in a way. Mm-hmm. So I get really excited to do things with people who mm-hmm. I think are fun to be around and mm-hmm. like share that same sort of sentiment where everybody's having a good time and everyone mm-hmm. wants to have a good time, mm-hmm. you know, like, mm-hmm. yeah, just like wanting to enjoy themselves and like enjoy the thing. Mm-hmm. So that makes me happy. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that.
Of course.
But I would like to create an environment where we all lift each other up. I think that mm-hmm. Is especially true like in literally the warehouse that we're in right now, recording this podcast.
Yeah,
like
real.
Stella and everybody here, we all are always looking out for opportunities for each other. And mm-hmm. I think it's just like very nice and heartwarming and a good place to live.
Yeah.
You know?
Real. Very real. Yeah. I will say something like this that's like, this might sound a little overly gushy or like fanboy-y almost, but I think one of the things that also like warms my heart in an interesting way is that I think that the community that I've been able to build and like the network of people that I have, I feel like I'm almost like in shock at how cool the people that are around me are. It's almost like I know people who have been in this space for like a very long time. Like Kemi, for example, has been like in cosplay for like over 10 years, dude. Like just locking in, like doing shit. Like there's so many people mm-hmm. who also have like decades worth of experience in this space that I admire their talent and ability and creativity so much. And it's so crazy to me that so many of those people are like my friends now.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, wow, dude. So in a way it's like, it feels cool to like find your people in a way, mm-hmm. but at the same time there's a little bit of like imposter syndrome where it's like dude, like these are like the guys, like I'm like here, like these guys like me, like what, okay, like I'm okay, you know.
Yeah. And I will say that never goes away ever.
That's nice. Okay, good. Glad
at
to
least
know.
In
Glad
my
to know.
Experience yeah, good, okay. As someone who's cosplayed for over 10 years I feel the same way a lot. So
nice. Okay, good. That makes me feel better. I swear, I'm like, bro, I can't believe that like these people like talk to me regularly. Like I want to say like Jess, I used to work. Oh man, I have so many I used to work stories. That's crazy. But do you know who Philip DeFranco is?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember SourceFed?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Okay, so I used to intern for Philip DeFranco.
No way.
And that's its own story, actually. But I used to intern. Wow. And do you know who Meg Turney is?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so Meg Turney was one of the hosts of SourceFed along with like Joe Beretta, all these other really, really, really cool fucking people. But I got to intern in their studio office and like see them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
I just went to her wedding last year, actually.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so cool. Like, oh, it's a crazy time. But that said, I think just being in proximity to like, I think that was really my first, I've always been in nerdy spaces, I guess, because I've always mm-hmm. been interested in like comics and movies and such. I just didn't like put on costumes, if you will. But I think Meg Turney was probably like one of the first like sexy nerds that I was ever exposed to.
Yeah.
And I think in proximity to that, I think Jessica Negri was one of the first like maybe cosplays I ever saw, but for sure one of like the first like sexy cosplays I ever saw. And this was a long time ago. Like I interned there in like 2013.
That's so crazy.
It's crazy, yeah. And so like I think Jess was one of the first people I ever saw like sexy cosplay. And I was like, I don't even remember what the cosplay was. I think it was like Pokemon or something. But I was like, oh wow, that's so interesting. And then it never came up again in my life for a very long time. But it blows my mind that now like I talk to Jess often. Like we respond to each other's stories. We're like, oh, when are you gonna come over and hang out? Like it's like, I'm like, that's actually wild. Like, mm-hmm. What the fuck?
Life is crazy.
It truly is. But at the same time, it's so fun to think. It's like, wow, what an interesting like journey. I feel mm-hmm. like as disparate as all of the places and spaces that I've been to in my life feel, it's funny how there's still like some kind of thread that like somehow connects them in some little way. Like mm-hmm. even thinking, I don't know how I didn't think about it. I was like, oh, SourceFed. I didn't really do nerdy stuff at that time, but that was more physical. I was always like in that headspace. I was always like mm-hmm. looking at those kinds of things and media and engagements. And so it's funny, like, oh, wow, what a good, what an interesting kind of like foreshadow in a way. Mm-hmm. It's like, who would have thought? If you told me in 2013, like, it's like, oh, Chris, you're going to be like a cosplayer and you're going to go like do stuff and like make stuff often and like work for XYZ and so on. I'd be like, oh, that sounds very different from anything I would have ever thought.
Yeah. But
here we are.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. I feel the same way. But
actually, I'm curious. You've been cosplaying for a long time, but I want to know what your story is. Not the generic, like, what was your first cosplay, but rather like how you like tripped and rolled your way into this well.
I will save that for the Patreon segment because I believe we're over time, but I will explain that to you.
Okay.
Before that, though, yes. Can you, first of all, thank you for sharing your story and thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I know you're trying to drive back to Vegas today and I've kept you for a while. So
You're good. It's an easy drive, I promise.
Okay, good. Can you please tell everybody where to find you online if they don't follow you already?
Yeah, of course. My username is WoChrisWoe because I make people say, whoa. but that said, it's spelled WH.
I was going to clarify as well. Yeah,
it's WHOA, Chris, WHOA. There are two accepted spellings of the word woe. So if you spell it the other way, you're valid, but that's not how I spell it.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I've made that mistake many a time. I'm like, where is he at? I can't find it.
I literally made an account. I took the username WOAH, Chris Woe, mm-hmm. and literally it's just the photo is like a meme, and then the bio is, I think you're looking for at Woe Chris Woe. and it's always funny to me, like when I get a notification from that page, like someone tagged you, I'm like, God damn it, they didn't read the bio.
I've done that. And I've been like, who is this in my messages right now? This isn't the right profile photo.
No,
but yeah, thank you again. Yeah. What projects are you working on? What are you looking forward to that we can expect from you in the next upcoming days?
Yeah. So I am currently, I've been in a process of like, I just cosplayed Phoenix from Valorant this weekend, and there's a couple adjustments that I still want to make to that cosplay. I think it's very good, but I think there are a couple things, like as a cosplayer, I'm like, this could be better, mm-hmm. that I want to adjust. So I'm working on that a little passively, and I want to finish it before finals for Valorant, which is in the beginning of October. So hopefully that'll be done before then. But I'm also working on a Mr. Terrific cosplay from the Superman movie that I'm very, very excited about. I'm actually learning a new skill that I've never learned for that cosplay. So if I execute well, hopefully it'll look sick. And then I want to do Blade for Marvel Rivals. I'm also currently like printing out all of the necessary accessories for Spider-Punk 2099, which is a Spider-Man skin in Marvel Rivals as well. I think that'll be a cool little crossover, like Hobie Marvel Rivals kind of vibe. And then I also want to do a Cloak cosplay for Marvel Rivals as well, because I think I have a really cool execution mm-hmm. in my head for how to really sell the illusion. But I need to like build a rig for it and I think integrate a couple other skills that I don't quite have now. So I need mm-hmm. to talk to some engineering friends, mm-hmm. but eventually that will be somewhere. But I would say the most prevalent things, like in Phoenix improvements, Mr. Terrific, and Blade from Marvel Rivals are the things that I'm like most excited about currently. Oh, and also Bulletproof from Invincible. I have an Invincible cosplay already. I like cosplaying Mark Grayson as well, but nobody ever cosplays Bulletproof, so I gotta represent for my boy.
I gotta
get out there.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing all of your cosplays come together. Lots of new content on the horizon. Very exciting. Well, to answer your question, I got into cosplay because I am a huge fan of Dragon Ball Z.